I would like to convene this meeting of the Lincoln County Board of Commissioners. Good morning. It is Wednesday, November 23rd, 2016. All three commissioners are present, and that constitutes a quorum. First item of business is adoption of our consent calendar. These are routine items or items that have been discussed at previous meetings. Are there any items that commissioners or staff wish to highlight or remove?
I'd like to make a motion to adopt the consent calendar.
I'll second it.
Moved and seconded to adopt the consent calendar. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. It's so ordered. We move on now to a public hearing. This is a public hearing on a name change for the portion of U.S. Highway 20 to be transferred to Lincoln County as part of the U.S. Highway 20 Pioneer Mountain Eddyville project. I will formally open the public hearing and ask staff for a report, and then we'll open the floor to public comment.
Commissioners, I'm going to provide a little background, but we have Roy Kenyon, our Public Works Director, and John Waffenschmidt, County Surveyor, who are involved in the process of naming roads, and they can answer specific questions if you've got that. And so let me start by just doing a little bit of background here. And initially, when the Highway 20 project was proposed many years ago, one of the things that ODOT looked for was a local match for the project. And so while they were spending a considerable amount of money, and as we all know, the end result was a considerable amount of money, more than was originally planned to do that section of Highway 20, the improvements there, one of the things that they wanted to do was actually transfer jurisdiction over portions of a couple of other segments of state highway to the county, and so that we would accept responsibility for keeping those roads open and maintaining those roads. And that included, some years ago, we actually took jurisdiction over Autocrest Loop, and that was part of the trade there. We've actually taken that and had that in the county road system for a number of years. And then to complete the project now, we had entered into an arrangement with ODOT, again, many years ago, to take over the what I'll call the old, for the time being, the old Highway 20 loop, which runs from Eddyville to Pioneer Mountain, that segment that was actually being replaced by the new highway. So the initial agreement with ODOT involved, again, us taking responsibility and maintenance. Oftentimes when that occurs, and in fact we're going to be talking after this particular hearing about a transfer of a county road to the city of Newport, now within the city, the jurisdiction that takes responsibility of that works an arrangement either to do improvements to the road or, quite often, as we've done in this particular case, take money in lieu of the improvements that are done so that we have a fund that we can utilize to maintain the road over a period of time. And obviously, once that comes into our responsibility, we're going to maintain it for many, many years when we're doing that. So the original arrangement had a dollar amount that was established related to this particular transfer, but that amount was based on, you know, a transfer that should have occurred many years ago and did not occur because of the delays in the project. So one of the things, I think it's actually on your agenda today on your consent calendar, was to actually formalize an amendment to that particular agreement, which increased the dollar amount. And you've had some discussions with Public Works Director Kenyon about the increase in the dollar. So that's occurred. We have not, though, at this point, actually accepted transfer of the road. And there are still some issues around, and really it's around the east end and the west end of the project, about what ODOT is going to retain and what they're going to transfer to us and what we're going to accept responsibility for. So there's discussions, ongoing discussions between Mr. Kenyon and ODOT, and that has actually not even occurred yet. So we have not actually accepted transfer of the road. But in the meantime, as this project was nearing its end, ODOT came to the county and said to us, you need to provide us a name for the area that's going to be transferred to the county, that segment in there, for our purposes, because we have to do a signage plan, some other things related to that. And so we were kind of faced with really having to deal with this issue of proposing a name for the segment that's being transferred to the county without even actually having jurisdiction or responsibility for that at this point. So a number of names were vetted by the county. We have standards in our county code for how names can fit in, and it's really, it was driven by an addressing and road naming system that was initiated through our public safety system in there. And really, it's extremely important that we provide this kind of uniform methodology for naming roads so that our 911 system, our first responders, can know when and how to respond to emergencies that occur within the county. So we've got a pretty detailed system that's in place here. And so as we vetted some initial names, and what we were trying to do was establish a placeholder here. Basically, we were looking for a placeholder to comply with ODOT's requirement that we come up with some kind of name. You know, we took the kinds of, we looked at a variety of names that reflected some of the history and geography of the area there, and unfortunately we had to, under our county system, had to exclude a number of these. So anything that has the word Eddie or Eddyville in it, for instance, because there's already a road that exists out there that has that name. Yaquina was another one because of the Yaquina River. We already have a Yaquina, a road name with Yaquina. We have Chitwood's got a name. So a number of these names that might have been considered had to get disqualified because of pre-existing the same name or similar names in that. What was settled on was a geographic feature called Crystal Creek. I'm going to let others explain where that is and what that is in the area in there, but that was the placeholder that we provided to ODOT. We do have a formal process, though, that we need to go through in order to actually finalize either that name or an alternative name, if that's what you so choose to do. And that's where we are today. So we've sent off a letter to the all the property owners or people who have addresses along this stretch of road. That was quite an extensive list. And telling them about the process we have for renaming this, explaining some of the requirements that we have under the code, looking at the proposed name of Crystal Creek, and then offering them an opportunity to come in and offer alternative names or object to the name that was being proposed, and that we would hold a hearing, and that's where we are today. We received some additional suggested names for the road. You've got a list of the names that were provided to us in the materials in here, and that's part of what you can discuss today. And if there's any particular questions about that process or any of the names currently in the system, or anything around the road, I'm going to defer to Mr. Kenyon and Mr. Waffenschmidt to answer those questions. But otherwise, I think we can hear from folks who I think are in the audience to talk about this and go from there.
Mr. Waffenschmidt, Mr. Kenyon, anything to add at this point? Or
I have a question for you.
Okay, why don't you come forward?
Roy, I'll let you answer this one. We acquired two pieces of road. Do you have any idea about what you think might be an average expense for those two pieces of road that cranks into your budget?
Talking about Autocrest Loop and then the right. Old Highway 20.
Yeah, you must have a number, kind of an idea what you think annually. I mean, every year is different.
Every year is different. Actually, Autocrest Loop, there was a lot of asphalt work done prior to us taking the road. And so the average annual cost of it's been pretty insignificant. We're talking probably in the area of maybe $20,000 to $30,000.
So that's for brush cutting and...
Yeah, because it's a fairly short section.
Right.
The old loop... Highway 20 loop is a totally different scenario because there wasn't any maintenance done prior to us taking that on.
Well, actually, didn't they do some maintenance a long time ago? But that was, they figured the job was going to be done like 10 years ago or something like that.
Yes, that's true. Originally, the original transfer was supposed to happen in 2009. The original agreement was to cover the time between 2005 and 2009, so that didn't happen. So there was very little surface treatment done, and so that's a totally different thing. And if you take a look at what we received for a payment and divide it basically by the 7.5 miles that we received, you know, you're looking at somewhere around $125,000 a mile for surface, which would be enough to pay for an asphalt overlay, but there's other issues. So, you know, annually, I'm going to say that road's probably going to cost us somewhere in the area of probably $80,000 to $90,000 a year. Because it, it's also, it's a school bus route, so we also have to make sure that it's plowed and sanded and de-iced and that it's open during every storm, which takes in then a bunch of overtime hours. And so it's going to be fairly significant amount to maintain that loop.
Thank you. That's what I was curious, what we're looking at for maybe. We have a bad year, it's going to be a lot more, but hopefully we
Correct.
Have a bunch of good years too.
Correct.
Offset. Thanks.
Could you fill us in a little bit more about Crystal Creek?
Crystal Creek basically is one of the drainages in that watershed. There's Trap Creek, Thornton Creek, Cougar Creek, Crystal Creek, Eddy Creek, Peterson, Hayes Creek. They all flow into the Ukwena. Crystal Creek happened to be one of them that wasn't repetitive. Crystal Creek isn't in any of our road systems. So, like you said, it was kind of a placeholder. It fit the criteria. Yeah, I don't believe that it was anybody's true favorite, but it worked at the time.
Any further questions?
Well, I guess
either of these gentlemen?
I'll ask the question now. We have 9 suggested names as an alternative to Crystal Creek, and again, when we originally, provided ODOT with the name Crystal Creek, it was recognized at that time that it's a placeholder. It was not a final decision. It was not a decision. It was just data that was provided to ODOT. Of the 9 names that have been recommended, are there some that would be eliminated under the criteria that we need to follow as far as the code and policy for the county?
That I don't know, because I haven't seen
it. Actually,
I haven't seen the list.
And I went through the list there, and again, with the main one is the one that has same or similar kinds of names, and that would mean that Eddy Creek Loop and Little Elk Creek both have similar, or there's something with Elk or Eddy already in the names within that area. Okay. So those would be the two that I think we came up with that specifically would not meet the criteria of the code.
Okay. So the other 7.
Well, we can have some comments on the other 7.
No,
but you know, maybe you want to listen to the public input
sure
first.
Sure, do. But first, I wanted to at least get a clarification as to which of the 9 really didn't meet the criteria.
And any name with Eddy or Eddyville doesn't meet the criteria
because it's already Eddyville
School Road,
yes.
Correct?
Yeah.
Right. And actually, Eddyville School Road. You would think that it only is that little short bridge that crosses the creek and runs into the school, but actually the right-of-way extends more or less through where the school is and through the parking lot, so it could actually, if some property was developed behind the school, it could become more of a noticeable road.
And again, there's Little Elk Creek.
There's Elk City Road. There's some other... So there's names that are similar or the same. So from our criteria, they would not be able to use that.
I have a question. How long has this been around? Because we do have some duplicate roads in county.
Well, no, and frankly, again, we do have some of those. And some of those are because they were named before we started our addressing system. That's a lot of those were just adopted and brought into the system because they already pre-existed. But the criteria have only been applied really to the new names for roads in there. And so we've been trying to be consistent with that, with those things. And again, I wasn't around. This is actually something that predates even me, when they made the criteria here. But there was a lot of discussion with first responders and the emergency community in terms of what they saw was important for them in order to respond to emergencies and not having same or similar names for those purposes. So that's really the driver behind the system we've got in place.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. And we'll open it up now for public comment. And I believe we've got at least two people who want to share some input with us.
And just to note for the Samsons, we do have they have in here the list of your names.
We have it with us.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you've got the list there too.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah, it's in the packet. And if you know the routine here, introducing yourselves for the record.
And I'm Paula Sampson of Eddyville, Oregon.
And I'm Jay Sampson of the same address.
Okay.
So, giving the county's criteria, I just started brainstorming, and these are what I came up with. And we have of course. I like long, winding road myself, but I'm not going to sing it for you. So it seems like our choice at this point from all these names would be a historical one rather than a physical description like Peter Sinkbrief or Big Ben or something like that. So we're really sort of looking at, Morris X. Smith. I like Memorial Highway myself. I don't know that.
And do you all know about Morris Smith?
No, I don't.
Explain that. Sorry, please.
I don't, but yeah.
So, you know, we've lived on our farm for 43 years and commuted on Highway 20, so we have our favorite spots and had learned about it. But Morris Smith propagated old apple trees and grafted them. And his trees go all along Highway 20. He lived in Chitwood, and that was where he had his orchard. But as you drive just before Eddyville School, there's the Morris X. Smith orchard that the students at Eddyville School. And we were able to meet Morris many, many years ago because we have very old apple trees on our farm. And so he took grafts from our trees. And I know that besides those spots, I'm sure Morris's trees are throughout the loop. And so I think that to recognize a man who did something pretty special and that lives on would be my choice. I just want to say I never even knew about Crystal Creek Loop. I know it's a placeholder, but that would be my last choice. So that would be, I think Jay and I both felt like that we would really like to honor that, and that would be our suggestion to the commissioners.
Thanks, Jay.
Yeah, I don't know if you have a second choice. Do you have a second choice?
Well, not really. I mean, any of these would work.
Yeah.
Anything's better than Crystal Creek.
And is your objection just because it's not a well-known feature?
Well, it doesn't have any connection with the new. It has a connection with the new highway because the new highway goes across Crystal Creek. It's where the 28-foot culvert is, essentially.
But it actually flows into the Quinn River.
Yeah. It does.
Yeah, the same as all the other creeks.
Except that it doesn't cross the highway. If you don't know where Crystal Creek is, you'd never ever see it from the highway, from the road. I mean, it's just one of those things that just doesn't.
Well, I kind of like the name because the Quinn is such a muddy river that you call it Crystal Creek. There's some. It is the name of a creek that's there, and it actually is a very clean water supply.
It is.
And so, but I struggled with this a lot.
Sure.
I mean, I humorously wanted to call it Doug Hunt Holler, but.
Yeah, there you go. We could do that as well.
I haven't lived there long enough.
And I don't think I know a lot about the old military highway, but I've been talking to local people, and Russ Glasscock is one of the folks that lives out there, and he was talking about the military, that it was an old military highway. So that was...
Before it was Highway 20.
Yes.
It was the Corvallis Newport Military Highway.
And just to note, the military part, there was actually several military roads in Lincoln County. Actually, I think there was an old one went through...
Yeah, it was originally the Roosevelt military Highway.
And then there was a military highway going through Celeste, too, an alternative route that went through there. So there, we've got a number of military roads in the county.
Yeah, so that kind of eliminates that.
And being a Beatles fan, I do like Long and Winding Road, but I don't think there's a good local connection.
No. I actually thought you should call it Abbey Road, and everybody has to have their left foot forward and be very close. Bad references here. You have to be able to understand those.
Thank you.
Well, appreciate the input, and we'll sure take it into consideration.
Do you make your decision?
We would move this forward for final decision next week. Is that the plan?
Yeah.
Great.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Regarding the difference between highway, road, or a loop,
there is criteria.
There are criteria. And normally, I think the recommendation that's normally come is if a road starts on a state highway and comes around and ends on a state highway, we'd like to call it loop. So we probably would put the word loop in there. We've done that historically. You know, Pioneer Mountain Loop. All the ones along 20 actually are loops back in. So we probably would add the term loop to whatever we have.
Okay, so Morris X. Smith Loop would be
loop. Yeah,
would be the choice then.
If we do go with that,
Keep crossing names.
Okay, thanks.
That's kind of what we did.
Thank you for your time and consideration.
And it was a pretty quick turnaround from ODOT that really didn't give us a chance.
Right. We understand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just so you know, I did run into a person that lives out in that area and at the auto parts store the other day, and he came up to me and said, I like the name Crystal Creek. Hmm. So that was public comment to me that was unsolicited, but I'll mention it.
Any further discussion at this point, or we'll just move this forward as a decision and action item next week then? Okay, next up is we will move to the decision and action calendar for today. An order initiating proceedings to transfer jurisdiction over Big Creek Road, County Road 402, to the City of Newport. Mr. Belmont.
Commissioners, we've been discussing this particular matter for some months now, and you had a presentation by Newport City Manager Spencer Neeble to answer some questions that you had about the status of the road, what the city's plans were for the road in the future. After that, we said we'd begin the process to initiate the transfer. So this is the formal action. It's an order that begins that process. If you adopt this today, it will set in motion. It's kind of a convoluted process under Oregon law that we...
I'm sorry, I just have to chuckle. It seems like everything we're doing lately is convoluted. So
these are things that actually date back. None of these things, they're all things that actually relate to stuff that goes back to the 40s, 50s, 60s, or before. So in this particular case, it begins a process in which we have to do a great deal of advertising, both posting on the road, public notice for, I think it's 4 consecutive weeks before we can actually hold a hearing. Then we have to hold a hearing on the transfer. At that point, we, if the decision is to move it forward, you make an offer to the city to accept this road, and you can place conditions on that. We've done this in the past. I think, I don't know if you guys, I know Commissioner Hall and Commissioner Thompson, I think. I'm not sure. Commissioner Hunt's been involved in one of these particularly, but... So we make an offer to them. They then can accept the offer by adopting what's called appropriate municipal legislation to accept it. And then it goes. So there's a back and forth in this process to get this completed. It takes about 6 to 8 weeks to get it all completed. But this is the first step to get that going. And I would note that we have an initiation order, and in these things we do reflect the fact that you've had a conversation with the city and a written response from the city manager about what their plans are for the road. So that information is at least a public record.
And not every state handles it this way. I remember the late Bill Cox, a former road department employee, I believe. Roy, did he come
Arizona?
From Arizona?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember him telling me that, like, for instance, in Arizona, when a city annexes land that was formerly in the county, any county roads within that territory automatically transferred to the city without...
Well, actually... Local access roads under our jurisdiction automatically transfer upon annexation. A county road and a county road system requires this action.
Interesting. Okay. So, given that this is just initiating the process, it doesn't make it final until the other steps that Mr. Belmont described are carried out, are we ready to act on this?
Well, we've talked about the
need. And given the fact that it's been discussed.
The city's been before us. We've heard from our public works director previously, so I'm comfortable in initiating the process.
I'm fine with it.
Okay. I would entertain a motion then.
I'll move to approve the order initiating proceedings to transfer jurisdiction over Big Creek Road, County Road number 402, to the City of Newport.
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt this order initiating proceedings to transfer the jurisdiction over Big Creek Road, County Road 402, to the City of Newport. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay, it is so ordered. Okay, right now, going to make the...
Can I make one?
Oh, sure.
I'm
sure.
Still concerned over public access, and we've expressed that. That's one of the reasons that I was satisfied with what this mayor had to say, but he doesn't bind future mayors. But I'm...
City manager.
City manager, I apologize. Yeah. But I'm still concerned that we try to maintain public access. Now, let me go as far as to say why I'm concerned. In the old days, Department of Fish and Wildlife put fish into all the rivers. They found that it was impacting our native fish, and they stopped that about, it must be 10 or 15 years ago. So that means the only places that are able to take trout, which is one of the main fisheries of the state of Oregon, doesn't seem like it, we're swimming both in the salmon here, but the state of Oregon. So your only access points literally are in the lakes and reservoirs, which we have very few natural lakes, and so the reservoirs become the main trout fishing place for a lot of people that might not be able to have boats or access to other points. And if there are water supplies and you eliminate those, virtually that would be almost no trout fishing at all in Lincoln County, even though we have a huge amount of water. And that's one of the reasons that I am questioning.
We want to make sure about doing what we can to maintain that access.
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes sense.
No, I would agree.
Okay, an agenda change now. I'm going to move an item at staff request from executive session to discussion and information, and this is a potential property transaction. And Mr. Belmont, if you would start this off, and Cheryl and Barbara, why don't you come forward? I'm sure there'll be some board questions for further background on this. Mr. Belmont.
So, Commissioners, we have an opportunity to purchase a property located in Newport to provide some services for our Health and Human Services Department. And I'd like Barbara and Cheryl to talk about the services that you provide at this location. But we've initiated the transaction with the property owner there. We're in our due diligence period right now, in which we're looking at whether this meets our needs. We've done some studies on the property. We've had it analyzed from an environmental standpoint. We're looking at the allowed uses within the zoning of the property, and then going to make some recommendations to you to move this forward to see if this is a decision the board wants to do to purchase the property. And so the property, just to give you the address, it's 37 and 41 Northwest Cottage Street. It's located not too far from here. It's just down Olive to where the American Legion, I always want to call it, the American Legion Hall is there. And then just immediately north, there is a duplex. It's just on the other side of the parking lot there. That is the property we're looking at. Health and Human Services has met with the neighbors in the area to talk about the services. We've made some contact with the city of Newport, obviously, with the city manager and looking at the zoning and those kinds of things. And I think we're at the point now where we're just going to discuss what the services are that can be provided there. And I'll turn it over to these guys to do that.
Okay, thank you. So, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I'm Cheryl Connell, Director for Lincoln County Health and Human Services. And with me today is Barbara Turrell. Barbara is my Behavioral Health Division Director. As legal counsel indicated, HHS has identified a duplex in Newport for Lincoln County Health and Human Services that would be dedicated to crisis respite housing. That is temporary housing, no longer than 28 days. I want to point out that crisis respite housing is an essential component of our efforts to prevent death by suicide in our communities. The location of the property, as legal counsel indicated, is 3741 Northwest Cottage Street, and it is a duplex. Respite housing would be provided for adult individuals at risk of hurting themselves, who have poor supports at home, or lack other supportive resources and need a safe place to stay temporarily. The emphasis will be on immediate safety and gaining recovery from the incident that precipitated the crisis. This will not be a detox or acute psychiatric facility. Lincoln County Behavioral Health will provide case managers and peer support specialists and will facilitate appointments with therapists and our psychiatric providers with these individuals while they are staying in the respite housing. The facility will also be staffed 24/7 with direct care staff to support the individuals during their stay. On Monday evening, Commissioner Hall, Barbara, and I held an informative session for the nearby property owners. The purpose of this meeting was to be able to share the plans for the property answer their questions, listen to their thoughts, and respond to their concerns. It was an open, honest, and productive conversation. In addition to that, last evening I did send out an email to our Mental Health Advisory Committee members, our Addictions Prevention and Recovery Committee members, and our and our county partners regarding this facility and the fact that we were planning to, were wanting to purchase it. I received very positive responses from those individuals that are on those committees. Many of them very thankful that this property has been identified for possible use for crisis respite housing. So it's very nice to be able to have an opportunity to speak with you today and to be able to have you, if there had been individuals here that wanted to voice their thoughts to you prior to your decision, to have that input directly to you. So what would you like to know? Yeah,
maybe just one other note, because I think this is important, that the particular property, there are no tenants in the property. The property is vacant.
Correct.
And so this is not a situation where there's any displacement of anybody that's currently in a housing situation. That the property owners had, when the tenancies that last left, they were putting the property up for sale. They did not renew any tenancies, so it is vacant.
And also I think it's important to note maybe that, again, that this is an outright permitted use under city zoning, so there's no conditional use or any other kind of permit required, correct?
Correct. It's a residential use under the city code as written, and so that's what it's an outright use for this in R4 zoning, which is the zoning in the area.
And I just observed, that I would agree there was a good turnout at that meeting. I think about 8 to 10 people were present, neighbors, and there was a degree of skepticism, but, and some very intelligent questions, I thought, very appropriate questions. And I think, well, maybe not everybody was completely won over to the idea. I think by the end of the evening, I really sensed a much greater level of comfort from most of the folks who were present, as well, a much better level of understanding, and they really appreciated the fact that even though this kind of outreach was not required, that the county did take this step, and that this was hopefully going to be the beginning of an ongoing dialogue with the neighbors. Commissioner Thompson, did you?
No, it's not even a concern. It's almost a compliment that from the time that you first told us about it, usually when we get into land purchases, it takes a long, long time. This has moved far faster than I've ever run into in any land purchase I've ever done with the county. And thanks for the work and getting a piece of property that really fits.
Thank you, Commissioner. I think one of the things that is key to our success is the fact that the owner of the property, who we disclosed what we would be using the property for, really supported that idea. She really felt, or she feels, that the previous owner of the property, which was her mother and who had lived there for many years, would really be honored by the fact that her property was going to be used for this purpose. And also, we have a very professional and nimble realtor that is helping us with that process. And so, those kinds of keys are important to success, having, a willing and supportive seller, as well as, a realtor that can help us, make this dream come true. So that's part of it. And I think, as legal counsel indicated, the fact that this property, even though it's a duplex, was vacant, or was vacant shortly after it was put on the market, helped tremendously in being able to get how far and how quickly we have come on this transaction so far.
Yeah, just a lot of positives about it. I believe the structure was built in 1977. Looks like very well built, very well maintained. One very attractive feature is a completely fenced-in backyard, so clients will have a safe, quiet outdoor space as well as the indoor living space. I'm just very, very pleased that this is happening. Commissioner Hunt?
Well, I think Cheryl has talked with us, and I think we have an understanding of why this particular piece of property is especially attractive, but I would appreciate you going over in more detail why, you know, why this piece of property. It isn't like we were just walking down the street and said, oh, let's go buy that piece of property.
Yes.
So, and also, you know, how long have you been looking and other properties that may have been evaluated?
Barbara, would you like to start this out?
Well, I think one of the first things that Cheryl ever told me about, like, 4 years ago, was that both of us, well, she was walking her dog around town looking at properties, and I was doing the same
always
thing.
On
I
the
don't
job.
Have a dog, but just always looking for a property that would work because infrastructure was an issue, is still an issue, actually. So, and then the issue of crisis respite has been ever since, it's been a topic ever since Truman Center closed, which was, what, 2011?
4 years ago.
2012?
2012, yeah.
So that, this property is not going to duplicate all the services that Truman had, but one of the ongoing issues we have as in addressing crisis are folks who meet, who come to the ED and their or emergency room and they don't feel safe for whatever reason. They don't meet criteria for a psychiatric hospitalization, but they're not safe going home. And our only option up to now was to say, well, you have to go home or you have to find another option or we'll put you up in a motel if we can do that. Sometimes we can, sometimes we can't.
Or they go back on the street.
Or they go back on the street. So this is a real needed part of our system of care. And because we're going to have staff there daily, clinical staff coming in to touch base with clients to make sure if they've got an appointment that they get to that appointment. We might even be able to do a group on site, which would be helpful for the folks that are staying there. Also, the type of building structure allows us to have separate locations for men and women if we wanted to do that, or if we had an adolescent who needed to be in a separate place, we could do that. So it gives us a lot of flexibility, which is really needed in order to address crisis. And that's kind of the one of the highest needs that we have right now in the county.
And this particular location, its proximity to Lee Street is another factor I don't think we've mentioned, but a huge plus.
Right.
Right.
So it allows people to walk back and forth. A lot of people don't have cars, so they're there. And they just so the it's a limited stay, meaning no longer than 28 days, which is enough time to safety plan with somebody very well and to get somebody on the road to where they need to go.
So to address Commissioner Hunt's question, what is my criteria? What was the criteria that we had established to have a facility that would meet this need? You know, the criteria was proximity to Lee Street because that's where our adult behavioral health services are done. That's where the clinicians are, the psychiatric staff are, the peer support specialists, the case managers, all the staff that do direct services. The other thing that's important to it is that it is in the center of town. So it is centrally located, and the reason for that being important is so that it decreases the amount of time that staff have to travel between this very important service delivery system and where they're based to work. The third thing is the facility itself. The facility has many universally accessible / handicapped accessible features to it. It's single level, so there's no stairs to negotiate. The flooring, especially in the big unit, is this really nice vinyl flooring that looks like wood. And you know, when you come to have an appreciation of the kind of environment that is most conducive to individuals to help them calm down, to be therapeutic, those natural kinds of wood tone finishes are very important. The rooms are large, you know, they're good size, so if somebody does happen to be in a wheelchair or needs some other kind of accommodative devices, we're going to be able to easily handle it as is. The structure itself is very well maintained. Our facilities manager, Jack Whaley, went through at the time that we did one of our inspections, and he was grinning ear to ear. He said, this is great. this place is in great shape. You know, this is going to be easy for us to maintain. So again, another important component there about not only ease of maintenance, but the general condition of the property being very well kept. There's no issues with mold, with other kinds of things that could be potential allergens to the clients that are staying there. And then the other component of it was, Barbara just put it so well. She said, this place feels safe. It's in a great location, but it just feels like a safe place. Between, you know, the quietness of the neighborhood, because it is on a dead-end street, the fact that even though there is a parking lot next door there as part of the American Legion, you know, that is not a difficult situation. It's not like it's next to a Walmart in terms of comings and goings and the noise that that might be. The other thing that's really an attractive feature of it was not only does it feel safe, but you know, the exterior yard being, or the yard and back being totally fenced, and really a very nice sunny situation. Barbara has designs to have some gardening therapy take place back there for individuals that are staying there. The other thing about it is the zoning, the R4 zoning. You know, it is an outright use. The fact that it was used as a place of business in the past. It was many years ago a denturist's laboratory. You know, there has been, you know, other uses for that facility in the past, and that fit in well with the neighborhood. And the other part of it too is that it's really accommodating for, with the front yard area being totally paved, it's really set up to be able to have our staff use that as a parking lot and have a minimal impact on the neighborhood for parking. That was one of the things that was voiced as a possible concern with the neighbors that we met with. You know, are you going to be taking up all of our parking? The answer is no, because we have parking that's really the front part of the whole lot. The size of the property, too, is really important. You know, it's 100 by 83.5 lot. So that, again, gives a lot of not only spaciousness and that feeling of safety, but it also has the ability for us to, if we needed to do some additions later on, to be able to expand in the back and the level. So, you know, we have been looking for a long time. We tried to use the little house that was behind the old Holland Law Office as a respite house, and that was exactly opposite of what we really needed, and we found that out very quickly. We've been looking, you know, at other kinds of properties over the past 4 years, but, you know, I mean, I really think that this is an excellent spot for doing that for all those reasons.
Okay. All very good. So is there any further questions from the board, or if not, can we just move this ahead for a decision next week?
Well, actually, no. What we'll do next week is we'll come back, because we have to talk to you about some of the particulars of the agreement, mm-hmm. and tell you where we've met our due diligence and how we've done that. So next week we'll do that. We'll actually then come back the following week to finalize this. And then assuming that you're going forward with this, we'll have a closing date of, I think it's December 9th. I think that's the date that we're looking at as a possible closing for this particular action. Yeah, it's a Friday. So it'll be next week, and the following week will be the two times you'll be considering it.
But at this point, am I sensing a consensus to move forward with the purchase?
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So I have a question.
Sure.
I might get questions from the community or mm-hmm. from members of the Mental Health Advisory Committee. Mm-hmm. Can they submit comments?
Yes.
Yes.
Board?
Yes.
That's how they would do that?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, either if they want to email you and you could then relay them to us, or have them email Tanya and she could forward them to us. But yeah, comments
okay.
would be welcome.
Comments can go through next week and the week after?
Right. It won't become final until
the 7th.
The 7th.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay, thanks.
Comments up to that time, more than welcomed. Yes, Commissioner Thompson.
So I'll let Doug take this. Now, when this is finished, before, don't leave, I'd like to talk to you. Just want to say something to you, and you don't need to respond.
Well, that's basically, I wanted to ask Barbara. I believe last time you were before us, you have a number of certificates and therapeutic activities. Gardening is one, or is that anyhow.
Oh, in my background? No, I'm thinking of trying to have a master gardener come in and work with a therapist and a client to
But there are other therapeutic activities that could be done there. I mean, you've talked about art.
Yes, depending.
Dance.
Yeah, movement therapy, drama therapy, any of those expressive arts therapies could be used there depending on what the need is and, you know, what the treatment needs of the folks who are there.
Well, I think that's important because it talks about the variety of different services that can be easily offered at that site.
Right.
Yes, good point.
So, it's that time of year where I'm out meeting with politicians and meeting with lobbyists and have been doing that. Considering the hole that's probably going to be in the budget for PERS and the changes in administration in the federal government, some departments and agencies are anticipating great changes. Yours is one that in the state budget is often moved depending on the financial situation. So will you please contact us as soon as you see things that look like it's going to impact your budget so we can make input into the process from the commission level directly to the state?
Yes, you know that I will.
Okay, that's all I wanted for an answer.
Thank you. Thank you for being heads up on that.
Okay.
Good work.
We move on now to reports, and it just seems like it's an HHS day. Community Health Improvement Plan update and next steps. Come on forward. Please introduce yourselves in case you'll get your presentation ready. Right.
Good morning. Thank you for having us. I'm Nicole Fields. I'm the Health Promotion Program Manager with Public Health. Mm-hmm.
And I'm Erin Parrish. I'm a Health Education Specialist with Lincoln County Public Health.
So we are here. I think you all were aware that a few months ago we had our Community Health Improvement Plan Revival Celebration. And so we're here to tell you a little bit about the progress we've made so far in the CHIP. And what our next steps are now that we're a couple years into the process. So the Community Health Improvement Plan, or the CHIP, is a collaborative five-year plan that identifies health priorities for our community. Important thing to keep in mind with the CHIP is it's not just a health department report that the health department does. It is something that we facilitate, but it really is collaborative from multiple community organizations. We solicit participation throughout the entire process, through the planning and the writing of the document to executing the goals. It's a plan to strategize how to improve health throughout the entire community. And our current CHIP was done in 2014, and it runs through the year of 2019. So we're about two and a half years into our current CHIP, so almost halfway. Our priority areas that were developed when we were putting together the CHIP are social and economic stability, which covers everything from living wage to affordable housing, mental health and addictions. We have maternal, infant, and child health, healthy lifestyles, which includes built environment, physical activity, nutrition, those kinds of things. And then family and community conflict, which includes domestic violence, bullying, so those sorts of items. We're going to move into some updates on where we are in the data, and then we'll talk about the next steps. So one of our goals included 211, and I think you all are probably pretty familiar with 211. It's kind of a one-stop shop where people can get information about services in the community. One of our goals was to increase calls to 211 to make sure that people know that it's available to them and that they're accessing the services. And this is one of the goals we actually met during these past couple years with the CHIP. So we'll keep an eye on it, but we did hit our goal, which was the 2,000 total calls or total contacts. And we're kind of looking at some other areas of data to make sure that that data is being, or that call data is being used now that the people who are getting put in touch with services are actually connecting with the services.
Yeah, and so this gives an example of our homeless student population and how that has changed throughout the years. So you can see that it has been steadily increasing, unfortunately. Most recently, in the 2015-2016 school year, 970 students from birth to 12th grade were identified as homeless at some point throughout the year. 970 children. That accounts for 772 K through 12 students, which is actually the highest that we've had in Lincoln County's school district's history since they've been collecting this data, and that makes up 14.5% of the student population. So it shows some work that we do need to be doing on that.
And 14.5 is a pretty big chunk of our students. So one of the resources that we have available, or that's available to them, is the Help Center. It's located, there's locations at Taft Elementary, Newport Middle, Toledo Junior, and the senior high school there, and then Crestview Heights. Provides some basic resources for the students, since we do have such a large homeless population with among our students. So they could get school supplies, hygiene products, there's some after-school programs, and referrals to other community resources to kind of...
Yeah. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but
no,
just I think for context for people who might be watching, the 14.5% in our district compares to a statewide figure last year of slightly less than 4%. So
yeah, that's really great context, too. Yeah. And, you know, when you look at the definition of homeless, too, it's not necessarily, you know, they're sleeping in a park. This can be people that don't have a stable home, so they're staying with friends, or they're going, you know, kind of couch surfing among relatives, but it's just, it's not necessarily the people that you're thinking right away, this is a homeless student. So, good addition.
So, I guess clarification, there are school-based health centers, and there's also help centers. The help centers are at the lower grade level. Is there coordination?
So the help centers are through the school district.
Okay.
And our school-based health centers are through HHS.
Okay.
But, yeah, our help centers are at different schools in the county, not necessarily the same ones as school-based health centers.
But the help centers are, what's the word I'm looking for, overseen or a function of the school district?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was not aware of them. That's why I was asking.
Yeah, it's a good service, and I think the thought, too, with offering them at the kind of lower grade levels is that some of the older students will have access to, you know, cell phones so they can make those calls to the services within the communities and kind of connect that way, and their younger students might not necessarily have that access to resources. So.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, and another community resource that is working on the homelessness issue is Samaritan House. It's located in Newport. They offer transitional housing for families with dependent children who are experiencing homelessness. And so they offer other services as well in addition to housing. They have personal development classes. They offer case management to help those individuals get on other programs and find other resources they might need, as well as find more permanent housing, find jobs. And they have a parenting program where they help new parents and parents with different classes that they might need.
So shifting a little bit more towards the mental health, we looked at our student wellness survey. So this takes data from children in 6th grade, 8th grade, and 11th grade. And the question that we're looking at right now is, did you ever feel so sad or hopeless almost every day for 2 weeks or more in a row that you stopped doing some of your usual activities? Little bit of a mixed bag in this data. It actually went down for the 6th graders, but it went up for our 8th graders and our 11th graders. I do kind of want to give a caveat that we don't really identify data as a trend unless we have 5 or more years. So it's a little difficult looking just at a 2-year gap because there's a lot that can contribute to that. But really what this is meant to do is kind of give us an indication of where our work is doing well and where we need to shift some more efforts.
So how many, there's the slide shows percentage of responses. How many responders were there?
I would have to look up that data for you.
Yeah.
Usually we get pretty good response for the student wellness survey since it's required for the school district.
Yeah, it's given to every student in every school in the school district. And they get a pretty high response rate, so we get a pretty good snapshot of the students in the county.
All right. As an aside, I appreciate your comment on trends. As a banker, we always look for 5 years financials.
Yeah. Thanks.
You know, I look at that number. Go back to that number, please. You're talking 25% of the kids here responded that way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, even higher for the 11th grade. You're looking at probably about a third of the students.
Yeah. That to me seems like an awfully high number. But it concerns me when I see a number that high. Is there a statewide average that you mentioned for any of those levels?
I can get you that data. Yeah, there is a statewide because this is done county by county. So I'd be happy to provide that.
Well, these kinds of tests, too. A lot is how the question's asked and who asked the question.
There is a lot with how the question's asked. I think, too, when we look at Lincoln County, we do have a higher adverse childhood experience rate within the county. And that can contribute to some of this with our high homeless population of students. That can contribute to this.
High poverty rates.
Right,
yeah.
But that number was at, you know.
Yeah, homeless was at 14%, but I just saw also
then you're talking 30% here, but this is a different number.
Yeah. But the new poverty rate is out, and the total child poverty rate in the county was right about that number, 30%, and everything that goes with that.
Well, as was mentioned earlier, too, you talk about the statewide percentage of homeless versus...
Yeah, but you're saying that homeless is somehow... I mean, it may be connected, but...
These are two separate things.
These
are two separate things. However, we're kind of looking at what might contribute to this, and we have to look at things that we know can contribute to adolescent depression.
Okay, what I would like and what I think is valuable is to have other reference points that then gives you a relevance of the information. Mm-hmm. So when our homelessness rate is higher than the state, that says there's an issue. If our percentage of responses in these categories are higher than the state or other counties or lower than the state or other counties, that gives me perspective.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for... Mm-hmm. But this is a lot of people just automatically take homeless, and this is a completely different number.
There may be some relevance, but there's not necessarily a correlation.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I know a lot of homeless people in my life, and a lot of them are not depressed.
And right.
Again, it's personal experience, and I can tell people I finished first in a race I ran. Well, there are only two runners, so it sounds different than, I finished first in a race. So, again, having a framework.
You hold your own races.
I know. You do well.
So, again, I think having that framework of additional information is important.
Yeah, absolutely. We can get you that data, too.
That would be interesting. Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about a couple of different programs that our county health promotion department is doing to work on this issue. So one of the things we do is we teach mental health first aid classes. These classes are taught to individuals and social service organizations. It helps them identify, understand, and respond to signs of mental illness and substance use disorders, and it's primarily used for people who are in crisis to help them get out of that crisis or find appropriate help that they need. So as you can see, our health promotion coordinators have taught 9 classes since they started teaching this in 2015, and we have trained 173 individuals, and we're continuing to do this training, and now Samaritan Health Services is also going to continue and start offering some of these trainings in the county, so we'll be able to increase that number, I think, in the next year or so.
Yes, we just got another trainer trained, so we're excited to be able to increase our capacity on that. We have also in our health promotion unit within public health, we have a grant that works on mental health promotion. One of the materials that we've worked on with that is some information on ACEs, which are adverse childhood experiences. In Oregon, about 18% report 4 or more ACEs, and that can be anything from, like, one ACE would be physical abuse. Another is sexual abuse, mental illness, incarcerated parents, substance abuse. So there's a variety of things that impact children as they're growing up. So that's what this looks at. And one of the things that we are trying to build to counteract these adverse childhood experiences is resiliency. So making sure that they have that supportive adult figure to help kind of stabilize their life to deal with some of these issues. So this is some materials that we've developed with the grant.
We don't have data available in this short time period to see if we've made impact yet, but we are hoping that in the next, I know Aaron was saying by the end of the year they were supposed to have data released, but it's getting kind of close, so yeah. We're not holding our breath in it coming before the end of the year, hopefully soon.
So we're continuing to create more materials that we'll also be able to give out to community organizations, those who provide direct service, to educate the public about what ACEs are, what signs to look out for, especially in young children, and how they can build the resilience in children so that they don't have these adverse effects later in life. Another important thing that we're looking at is vaccination rates among our school children. And so it's students that don't have a medical or other exemption are excluded from school if they don't meet the vaccination requirements. And so our public health nursing program has been working really hard with the school district and pharmacists in the county to get our exclusion rate down. And as you can see, in just a couple of years, it's gone down pretty significantly, and they're still working on improving that rate. So I think we're seeing some really interesting work being done around this.
And this was actually a quality improvement project that we took on in public health. So we were excited about this one.
I was realizing that initially I interpreted that slide incorrectly, thinking that that was the number of students that were vaccinated.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
No, you.
This is good news.
It's
correct. We've got a good news one.
I jumped to a conclusion before reading it. So, yeah. No, actually, that's very positive.
Yeah.
So our next two slides deal a little bit with our tobacco use and cigarette smoking rates in Lincoln County. As I'm sure you're all aware, they are quite high here. Some of the things that we're doing to combat this is we recently received a Sustainable Relationships for Community Health or SEARCH grant in partnership with Lynn and Benton counties. And what that does is it looks at creating a closed-loop referral system, and we're piloting that in our federally qualified health center. So what that looks like is if you came into the clinic and I asked you if you're a smoker, you say, yes, are you interested in quitting? Well, yes, I am. Well, instead of just handing you a tobacco quitline card, we're actually going to make that referral to the tobacco quitline, so the quitline will call them and kind of take that barrier away of them having to follow up on the services themselves. So we're just in the early pilot stages. We're on our second Plan, Do, Study, Act cycle with that, but we're finally getting some referrals, and we're hoping to have data on that soon.
Again, I'll point out, I think that's a slide that shows our county compared to the state, and that points out we've got a pretty serious challenge.
Yes.
And this is our smoking rate among adults. We actually have the highest smoking rate in the county for the adult population. Or in the state, I'm sorry, in the state is what I meant. So 1 in 3 adults. And so another project that our tobacco prevention and education program coordinator is working on is working with a nurse from Samaritan Health Services to provide smoking cessation courses in the county so that there are some local resources as well as the Oregon Tobacco Quitline that people can call.
So looking a little bit towards physical activity and nutrition, and I know that this is one of the areas where we feel like public health can really do a lot more to step up, because we're not currently, we don't really have any funding streams to address this right now, but it's something we're looking at for our future. We have 25% of 8th graders and 28% of 11th graders drink 4 or more cans of soda per week. So to put this in context for you, and I thank Aaron for the statistic, an average can of soda can have up to 39 grams of sugar. Your daily recommendation from the American Heart Association is only 37 grams of sugar. So if you drink one soda a day, you're over your allotment already.
And then we also looked at physical activity. So this is kind of the converse, that it's showing the percentage of students who are meeting the 60 minutes of physical activity per day goal. So it's 23% and 32% of 8th and 11th graders, which kind of shows that actually the majority are not getting that amount of physical activity.
Did you say 15 minutes or 60 minutes?
60 minutes. I'm sorry. Yeah, 60 minutes. So
I may have misheard you.
Yeah, so it shows, again, that we need to do more to encourage physical activity among our youth in school setting and outside of the school setting, and there are different ways that we can do that.
So
this is one of the challenges that we can raise all the smart kids in the world, but if they're not physically fit, they die young, and we lose in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that kind of number is really concerning, because I'm sure it was much higher 40 years ago than it is today. That's getting down to, when you're talking 23%,
mm-hmm.
that's, at that age, it's ridiculous. You've got to start physical activity way before that age.
Yeah, yeah.
Or it'll never carry through your life.
Yeah, and we're just going to see chronic disease rates go.
Oh, yeah, we're creating our own health problems because of the lack of physical activities, but yet we put more and more pressure on the kids to achieve academically,
mm-hmm.
but we don't seem to want to put pressure on the kids to achieve physically at young ages. I'm trained in education. I'm just going like, whoa, there's something wrong in this system.
Yeah.
And it looks like that's the lowest numbers I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's very concerning.
Yeah, so we'll be tracking this trend data as we do get it. And we'll be able to show it to you and compare it to the state rate. We can get you that information as well.
Thank you. Have you ever correlate those numbers to, let's say, a Valley school or any other areas?
We can.
It'd sure be an interesting number to see how you're doing. I mean, we're worried about a lot of things, but if you don't get physical activity when you're young, you don't carry it through the rest of your life, your chances are very rare that somebody changes if they haven't got that program. And that may be the easiest thing to change that will change your other numbers as you go through. But I've never seen the numbers correlated with other areas of the state.
Yeah, we can.
Would that not be part or that objective to increase the time that there's physical activity be part of a wellness program?
Yeah,
in general, I think that would be a great place to start, because you don't want to just hit on that one. You can have all the physically active children you want, and then you're feeding them, you know, pizza and sodium and soda cans. And, you know, you run into some trouble. So I think doing kind of a comprehensive like wellness policies or working with the school districts could really give us a lot of traction towards improving those numbers.
Very good.
Thank you.
So one partner that is working with the school districts right now is the CATCH program. They're collaborating with the OSU Extension here in Newport, or here in Lincoln County. They're at Crestview Heights and Taft Elementary right now. They're expanding the program a little bit. And right now it's a pilot program to implement some physical activity tracking in schools. It works with kind of a healthy eating and physical activity combination to get that into the school environment. It is a pilot, so it's kind of, we're trying to see how successful it is right now, but they are looking to expand. So I think that they've gotten some good data so far.
And those scored trackers, they're kind of like Fitbits for children. So they track all kinds of different physical activities. So they're hoping that with developing this pilot, they can kind of track the physical activity the children are doing, and then we can look at, you know, how we could increase that and what's working.
So how many kids do you have that are in this program where they use these trackers?
I don't know. I don't know that they've implemented it yet, but I can find out their numbers.
I've seen quite a success with Fitbit on seniors that just are somebody that wouldn't normally work out, and they get one of these, and all of a sudden they're tracking their own. And I've seen some amazing changes with these devices, and I've never seen a program that was developed for kids. You might be able to make quite a change. I don't know, but is anything like that been done to track?
So this scored physical activity tracker has been tried in other schools in Washington State, and it's been successful. So I think that's why they're taking it and wanting to pilot it here.
How do you support that program? I'd be a big advocate of that, and then I'd like to see it track back in to those numbers that you had before to see if we can, through electronics, actually improve.
Who's the contact at Extension that's the local contact here?
So this is also being done through Samaritan Health Services, this particular CATCH program.
Rich Waller
can get
information on it.
So maybe Commissioner Thompson.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely interested.
Yeah, and when we were looking at putting this presentation together, we did want to feature things that were outside of HHS, too, since it's supposed to be so collaborative. So I apologize that we don't have all the information on this, but we can definitely refer you to. the people you'd want to talk to.
Please do have them contact me or...
Yeah, absolutely.
So
this data, again, it's only for a couple of years, but it's also from our student wellness survey, so surveys taken in the schools. And they asked students if they didn't go to school one or more times in the past 30 days because they felt unsafe at school or on their way to school. So this kind of gives an example of bullying prevention efforts as well as other parts of the community safety for youth. And so we can see among the sixth graders, it's gone down, even just in a couple of years. But it's either increasing or kind of staying stagnant among the older youth. So it kind of shows that we could do some more bullying prevention perhaps in the schools or other interventions to work with youth to make sure that they're feeling safe at school, on their way to school, and they're not missing school because of that.
I assume that's percentages?
Yes, I'm sorry.
All right, so this is the last one, and again, it kind of touches on community safety. This is our crimes against another person, so we're talking... like assaults, robberies, sexual assaults, those kind of things. This looks at the trend with offenses. We're down a little bit. Again, it's actually, for yearly data points, this is pretty steady. So I wouldn't say we've seen too much of a fluctuation either up or down, so another area where we could probably do some work.
So we are working now to restart a CHIP work group. We'd had them in the past, and they kind of slowly stopped meeting. So we're going to revamp it and hold one work group. We're going to restart that on December 16th at the Western Title Building, which is our HHS administrative offices, from 11:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. The purpose of this will be to reestablish the work group, get some community engagement, because... again, the CHIP is really a community-driven process, and we want to make sure that we're getting as much community voice as possible. So we'll recap the revival celebration we had. We had some different community members at that celebration. We had them voice their opinions on priorities that we should be looking at to see, are there any changes? Because we're always reevaluating our CHIP as well, because it is a five-year process. We want to make sure we're continuously thinking about what are the priorities. Are we still meeting those? We're going to develop a mission, direction, and goals for this work group so that we're staying on track moving forward, keeping people engaged in the process, and also making sure that we're meeting out beyond just Newport to all different parts of the county. So I actually also have some flyers for the CHIP work group that just have the details on it.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you for a great presentation.
Good information.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, lots of good information. And okay, open it up to commissioner reports. Well, we were all at the yearly conference of Association of Counties last week, and I was installed as AOC president, and feel like that's quite an honor, only the third Lincoln County Commissioner ever to serve in that capacity. We had Harold Moffitt in 1967, Don Lindley in 1997, and I'm excited about it mainly because I think it gives me a better platform to advocate for Lincoln County and all Oregon counties.
So this wasn't one of those Doug Hunt races, was it?
No. Actually, a guy did run against me when I was elected second vice president 2 years ago, but he pulled out at the last minute, so I guess technically I did win it without opposition.
For the record, I did have the opportunity to finish first in another race because I would have been the only person that ran it, but... Director Kenyon organized a booster run for Toledo High School, and it was the weekend of the supposed big storm, so I showed up and I was the only one there, and I thought, I don't need to run all by myself to be able to say I finished first. So could have been two first place finishes.
So congratulations on your
victory. Thank you very much.
I think you'll do a very good job.
Well, thank you. It's going to be an interesting and challenging year. I mean, every 2 years brings turnover in the ranks of county commissioners, but I think when 2017 begins, we're going to have 31 new commissioners and county judges out of 120, so that's roughly a 25% turnover in the ranks of Oregon commissioners, which is the largest in anybody's memory. Nobody's gone back and researched, you know, way back into the deep past. But so it'll be an interesting year trying to bring new commissioners on board. You know, I can say already the consensus is, and hopefully that AOC can be at the table and be an advocate for finally getting some kind of a transportation funding package going, because everybody realizes how critical that is to Oregon's economic future. So we'll be in there on that and a lot of other issues important to Lincoln County and the rest of the state.
So has any president ever been impeached?
Not yet.
I'm curious to see how you're going to handle Eastern Oregon.
Well, I've got a lot of friends over there. So, you know, AOC, that's another thing I think, you know, for rural, urban, and frontier counties, AOC, in my 12 years of experience with the organization, does a very good job of coming together on issues where the various regions and political interests can find common ground, and if there is some common ground, setting those issues aside.
Well, I like, haven't had, I mean, I've been around AOC for years, but this session here may be biggest urban-rural split, as much as a prediction that I've seen in the state, just feeling it's, you're going to see it, ramifications of what's going on around here that may make party not as important as where you are in an urban-rural split. Now, we'll see. Every session spins out differently, but that's my observation from the outside looking at it today. Going, wow.
Okay.
Well, again, I think it you know, accolades to you, Chair Hall. There are 120 commissioners in the state, and you're the one that's president of AOC this year, so congratulations.
Thank you very much. All right, now we need to open it up to constituent input. People can address us for up to 5 minutes on any topic. Hearing none, we are going to go into executive session under ORS 192.660, paren 2, paren H, to discuss litigation.
Yes, and we do not need the second.
That was canceled because we moved that to public session. Yep. So we expect to go back into public session following this session. Okay. Then we're going to adjourn the public meeting, recess into executive session, and we'll see you back here Wednesday, November 30th.